Oh, man. Kobe was a big part of my life, man. When he was drafted, I was 8 years old, so obviously, you know, I followed his entire career.
Man, I'm hoping I get tickets, man, but if, you know, if I don't, is the experience of being here all the way from Louisiana, man, it's just it's surreal, man. So, you know, I'm just thankful to be here.
Everything's like kind of put on pause and just, you know, we got to be together and just, you know, get over this hurdle together as a family, a unit, you know, in that aspect. That's how I see it.
The whole city is in mourning. And you can see that, you know, everybody, everywhere you look. And if you see the murals all over the place, it's everybody was touched by him going away like that.
Good morning. It's Air Talk. I'm Stephen Cuevas in for Larry Mantle. Thanks for joining us. And there you have the voices of Laker fans as we await the public memorial of Laker great Kobe Bryant, now underway, or rather soon to be underway, at the Staples Center. It looks like the start time could be more like 10:30, and that'll be the focus of our first hour. Then in our second hour, we look at the issue of gentrification in the neighborhood of Boyle Heights. A new Netflix series called Gentified focuses on multiple generations of one Latino family as they navigate the rewards and the costs of a community with a rich immigrant history undergoing profound economic and cultural changes. But we begin with the public memorial of Laker great Kobe Bryant. It's been 4 weeks now since the tragic helicopter crash in Calabasas that killed Bryant, his teenage daughter Gigi, along with two of Gigi's teammates and five other people, including the pilot. We want to hear your thoughts and questions as we celebrate the lives of Bryant and those who traveled with him. Maybe you met Kobe or had the chance to work with him. Maybe you spent hours just watching him on the court as he helped the Lakers to five NBA championships. Even if you're not a fan of the game but want to comment on Bryant's impact on Los Angeles and on pop culture in general, we welcome your thoughts. Call us at 866-893-5722. Tweet us at AirTalk. You can also comment on the AirTalk page at kpcc.org. Joining me in studio is KPCC's A. Martinez, host of Take Two and former host of Lakers Line on ESPN Los Angeles. Hey, A.
Hey, Steven.
So, A, I was thinking this morning about you being a lifelong Lakers fan, a lifelong fan of sports. 4 weeks out from the tragedy, what's on your mind, not only as a journalist, but as a fan of Kobe, as a fan of the game, as a fan of the Lakers?
Well, I'll start off the journalist part in that walking around the city and just dealing with people in the city, I'm still surprised. We've heard it's been 4 weeks out. That it's been a month, yet there is still a gigantic hole, seemingly, in a lot of people's hearts in this city. And that even people that aren't necessarily Laker fans or hardcore basketball fans, they also feel what's going on with their neighbors, with their fellow Angelinos, because this is something that has obviously touched everyone so deeply that they can't help but feel sorry as well for them going through what they're going through. So this has been one big month-long collective grieving period that I think is unifying for the city, but also very, very touching, because I think a lot of people see this city, Los Angeles, is very vacuous, very, you know, it's Los Angeles, it's L.A., but I think now with what everyone has been seeing out of L.A. around the world, I think maybe hopefully it gives the rest of the world and the rest of the country a different picture of what Los Angeles is all about. And then for me personally, you know, I when it comes to the Lakers, I've always said that I've always been a bigger Laker fan more than a basketball fan, and I turned that to the Dodger. I was Dodger talk host for a long, long time, so I lived my dream doing what I wanted to do as a kid, which is travel with the team. But I always saw myself as a baseball fan ahead of being a Dodger fan because I love the sport so much. And when it comes to the Lakers, I've always thought with Magic Johnson as the guy I grew up with being my ultimate Laker, I always saw him as a superhero, someone that I couldn't really touch or relate to because I was a kid and he was just a god. Kobe's different, though, because Kobe came in 1996 when he was 17 years old. And I wasn't that much older than Kobe when he came into the league. And I think a lot of people grew up with him. That's why this hurts a little bit more. You've seen him at his height. You've seen him be at his worst in different kinds of situations. And then you saw him transform himself into a father, into a role model, into someone who's an advocate for women's sports. The way he's involved with his daughters, that, I think, hits everyone right there, because at the end of the day, that's what a lot of people just aspire to be.
And if you'd like to join the conversation, it's 866-888-5722, 866-888-KPCC, or visit the AirTalk page at kpcc.org. I was trying to think of another time in Los Angeles since I've been here, 15 or so years, when the last time was that we saw such a public outpouring after the passing of a celebrity type figure. There was the big outpouring for Nipsey Hussle, yeah. But that was Nipsey was much more of a local California kind of figure. Kobe is much more international. And as we heard in that montage, people from outside of Los Angeles also feeling this deep rift.
And that's the power of sports, right? Because think about it, you mentioned Nipsey Hussle. If you weren't a hip-hop fan, if you weren't a rap fan, if you weren't following music, maybe you don't know who Nipsey Hussle is. Then you don't know his story and how tied he was to his community down in South Los Angeles. But you don't have to necessarily be a basketball fan to know what Kobe Bryant is and what he has done and how you know how much of a impact he has had in this city's shape and form and the way a lot of fans see the Lakers and basketball. So I think that's the cross part of Kobe Bryant's impact in that he crosses over not just basketball fans, not just Laker fans, but just Angelenos in general. I think that's what's bringing everyone together on this.
And what do you think we can expect at today's public memorial?
Well, the one thing we still don't know is exactly who is going to speak. They've held those plans very close to the vest. The one thing we have seen, at least online, is that anyone that has a ticket got a T-shirt with Kobe Bryant and his daughter, three different images, a black T-shirt with three different images on the front, Brian on the back, a celebration of life right in front of one of the pictures. And then they also got a program as well. So that much we do know of that that's going on inside Staples Center. We're just looking at the TV screen.
Mm-hmm.
It's dark inside Staples Center. The lower bowl where the basketball court would be is just full of people getting ready, as you mentioned, for the event that is slated to happen in about 20 minutes. And there seems to be purple light illuminating the floor down there. So everyone's waiting to see exactly what's going to happen, who's going to speak, and how this whole thing will go off.
Well, we have a team of KPCC reporters and producers out in the field. Let's start with Emily Henderson, producer. She's at LA Live, at the LA Live Press Zone. Emily, what do you see?
I am seeing the last few fans just trickling through the doors of Staples Center right now. I arrived here around 6:30, and at that point, you know, not many people were here. A few ticket holders lined up outside, but you needed media credentials to get through the barricades. You know, around 7:15, they started letting people through, and the crowds just grew from there. You know, lots of people in their Lakers, purple and gold, a lot of Kobe Bryant jerseys. I talked to one dad from Ontario who was here with his sons. They arrived at 6 a.m., so they
wow.
were, you know, right towards the front of the line, one of the first people to come and line up in front of the doors. And there was a huge crowd, you know, around 8 when the doors were supposed to be open, lined up in front of the doors. And then finally at 8:30, they opened and people gave sort of a whoop of celebration to finally be able to get in. And from that point, people, you know, continued to file through and latecomers continued to arrive. And at this point, it's finally looking like things have cleared out. The fans are inside and ready for, you know, to find their seats and watch this celebration of life that, as A said, we'll wait and see who's going to be speaking and perhaps performing today.
Yeah, and we have KPCC reporter Robert Garova outside Staples Center. Robert, what's the scene like out there?
You know, Emily mentioned, you know, it's supposed to be a celebration inside. It really feels like a celebration outside, too. You know, you've got food trucks, vendors, selling all different types of Kobe gear, scarves, ponchos, hats, jerseys. You know, you got a lot of people, of course, that are here at, you know, completely cramming up Olympic and Figueroa trying to get in, who have tickets. There are also a lot of people who have come just to be close to what's going on inside. You know, people just holding something that from Kobe that, you know, that's been special to them over the years. And generally a lot of people down here for a Monday at this time of day.
Now, people aren't just gathering in Los Angeles around the Staples Center. They're also out in Orange County and other places. We have Austin Cross, KPCC producer, out in Santa Ana, where he's at a viewing viewing of this public memorial. Austin, what's the scene?
Hi, Stephen. Yes, I'm at the City Hall. They're showing the memorial right now in the council chambers. It started off with a small event, though, with a small gathering of people with a moment of silence. We heard some opening remarks from three council members, Vince Sarmiento, David Penaloza, Phil Becerra. They read the names of all the people who did die on that helicopter crash. All of them did live in Orange County. And then there were some very touching moments that I heard and experienced from people. Council member Sarmiento said that he was more than just an athlete. He was a neighbor. That kind of just shows how personal everybody really takes this right here. I talked to Gloria Morales. She's one of the people who came out and actually took off work and took her kids out of school just because she wanted to be around others for this day. She noted that she and Bryant are the same age. So they kind of grew up together, and that she really just wanted to, you know, not be alone as she witnessed this event. And of the 60 people here, I talked to a good handful of them. This was very common theme. People just did not want to be alone as they went through this particular process. It's partially grief. It's also partially just celebrating what he meant to them. One person I spoke to, Natalie Flores, says she wanted to break into tears, but she also wanted to be strong for others. She was decked out in all the Lakers gear and was just really there, I think, to talk with the community and to be with others.
Well, one expression of grief that we've seen throughout the city of Los Angeles is in the form of murals. KPCC reporter Kyle Stokes has visited some of those murals, which also have kind of served as places where people can come and take pictures, maybe leave some flowers, and just sort of share their own grief. Kyle, what have you been seeing today so far?
Yeah, so I'm right now at a mural that's in Studio City on the side of a car rental business that you can see it's an image of Kobe Bryant looking kind of skyward with a Laker jersey on. He's got his Laker jersey, sort of the collar of the Laker jersey in his you know, kind of gripped in his teeth, and his daughter Gianna looking up over his shoulder as well. It's one of dozens of murals that have popped up all around. And as you said, Stephen, there are about a dozen prayer candles here. There's a print of Kobe styled like the Madonna, like a stained glass print of Kobe as the Madonna, and of someone actually someone from Chicago. My photographer Chava Sanchez is with me and was talking to someone who came all the way from Chicago hoping to luck into some tickets to the memorial, but couldn't do that. And so when he decided to come here to this mural and leave some flowers and a stuffed animal here, just to sort of feel a part of this. And as I've been like looking at these really cool murals across the city this morning, I've been talking with people, just stopping them who pass by, and everybody has a Kobe moment, even if they were never really into basketball. I was in on Melrose earlier this morning, where there's a big cluster of really great murals, and just talking with a senior at Fairfax High School who said, "I wasn't really into basketball, but my mom sure was." She'd always pull me in to watch Laker games featuring Kobe. As you say, Stephen, a good place here with these murals to sort of leave some public memorials. And just a reminder that this is an event that's not just being felt at Staples Center this morning and today. It's being felt all across the area.
Yes. Well, inside Staples Center, we have KPCC producer Pablo Cabrera. One thing we know is we don't know exactly what the lineup is for today's memorial. But Pablo, any word yet on who is going to be eulogizing Kobe today?
Not yet. A is right. So people who are here at Staples, they got this program, but the program only has pictures of Kobe and Gianna. No mention on who's going to be taking the stage, who's going to be performing, who's going to be speaking. So we don't know that yet. About 5 minutes ago or so, though, the musicians and members of the choir who will be performing, they just took the stage. The stage, it's a round stage right in the middle of the court. If you've ever been to a Lakers or Clippers game here, it's right in the middle. And down on the floor, we have about 100, 200 people. I assume those are the VIP people who got invited by either the Bryant family or the Lakers organization. But then everybody else, all the seats are pretty much taken. It's definitely a full house. And I'm another note, I'm sitting right next to a member of the media. It's a media member from Japan. So that just goes to show you just how big Kobe Bryant was of a figure. You know, it's not here just in LA or in the United States. It was all over the world. So he's here covering just this big, big moment.
And what would you say the overall mood is inside the place? Is it somber? Is it a little bit more celebratory?
A little bit of both. So what's happening now, they're showing highlights of Gianna Bryant.
Mm.
About 10 minutes ago, they were showing highlights of Kobe, and any Laker fan would know that there are so many of them. And in the end, you know, when the video was over, people were just cheering. I mentioned earlier this morning that it has this early morning game feel to it. So many jerseys, people, adults, children wearing Kobe Bryant jerseys, not just Laker jerseys, but you know, jerseys of his high school, because, you know, he has fans all over the place. So I want to say a little somber. We're just waiting at this point for the whole thing to start, and we'll see what happens then.
Also joining me in studio is A. Martinez, host of Take Two. A., I don't want to put you in the position of speculating, but I'm going to anyway.
Why not? Yeah.
Who do you think some of the you know, more prominent sports figures are who may say a few words today? Those who had an especially close relationship with Kobe Bryant.
Right off the bat, I would expect Jerry West, the former Laker great, who also was the general manager of the Lakers when he orchestrated the trade to get Kobe Bryant to Los Angeles. You got to remember, Kobe Bryant was not a Laker for a brief moment. He was drafted by the Charlotte Hornets in 1996 as a 17-year-old at a Lower Merion High School in Pennsylvania. But Jerry West had been eyeballing Kobe Bryant the entire time during the pre-draft process because he saw something in him and he wanted to get him. He traded Vlade Divac, who was a very popular Laker player at the time, a center, to the Hornets, and everyone thought, wait a second, you're trading a really good player and a really popular player that everyone likes for this 17-year-old kid? What do you know about the 17? What do you know, Jerry West? Tell us. He said, just wait and find out. And we found out 20 years later that he was a 5-championship Laker player. So that's one person who I expect to speak. Magic Johnson, I expect to speak as well. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, very eloquent in almost everything he does. I would expect him to speak as well. And I can't imagine LeBron James, who is the current leader of the Lakers at the moment, who really took a lot of cues from Kobe to be here as well, speaking as well. So those are just a few names that I expect will say something.
We're remembering the late Kobe Bryant on the day of his public memorial, happening now at the Staples Center in downtown Los Angeles. Joining me is KPCC's A. Martinez, as well as our reporters in the field. We also want to hear from you. 866-893-KPCC. That's 866-893-7722. Online at the AirTalk page at kpcc.org. It's AirTalk on KPCC. Back in 1 minute. Well, if you need to be in the area of the Staples Center in downtown LA this morning, expect a few street closures, heavier traffic than usual, as the public memorial for Kobe Bryant continues. It's the focus of our conversation today on Air Talk. I'm Stephen Cuevas, in for Larry Mantle. Joining me is A. Martinez, host of KPCC's Air Talk. We'd also like to hear from you. Maybe you're outside Staples Center or on your way to pay respects at one of the many impromptu memorial sites around the Southland. The number to call is 866-893-5722. That's 866-893-KPCC. In 2018, Kobe Bryant opened the Mamba Sports Academy in Newberry Park as a center for young athletes, and it's where he was headed that fateful Sunday with his basketball-loving daughter and two other teenage players when the crash happened. A, you talked to Cappy Pondexter, the retired two-time WNBA champion and Olympic gold medalist, about Kobe's impact on youth and women's sports.
Yeah, she worked with Kobe Bryant on a lot of youth sports initiatives. And one of the things that Kobe Bryant, especially when Gianna started to emerge as a basketball player, that Kobe got himself very involved in promoting the WNBA and women's sports. The WNBA has been surviving for a long time, supported by the NBA's profits. And what we wanted to find out from her is exactly how we would all now, or at least the league, would fill the void of Kobe Bryant not being there going forward because he was such an advocate for women's sports.
Well, let's hear that conversation. This is A. Martinez with Cappy Pondexter, the retired two-time WNBA champion, and yes, the Olympic gold medalist as well. Let's hear that.
You were a guard in the WNBA, and I was looking up some of your highlights and your stats. You were kind of a guard like Kobe was a guard in the NBA. You had a similar style. I mean, it's got to be something that it's got to be really painful for you, knowing that you two kind of had the same kind of game.
Yeah, it is painful because I just always imagined that we would always have more time because I always looked at Kobe as being here forever. I just knew that I would hear his Hall of Fame speech, and I just knew that I would be right behind him. And I can remember our last conversation, we talked about retirement, and he's actually the reason why I hung up my sneakers, because he just gave me the confidence to know that everything was going to be okay and that he was having the time of his life.
Yeah, it's a scary thing for a professional athlete to decide when to hang them up. I know you and Kobe participated in an NBA and WNBA initiative called Her Time to Play in March of last year. Can you tell us about the program and its goals?
The program was a partnership between the Mamba Academy and the WNBA to push girls in sports and to give them an opportunity to use sports as a vehicle to, you know, not only bring a culture together, but highlight women's basketball. And, you know, it was a fun day. The girls were so in love with Kobe. They never let a moment go by where they didn't embrace him. And he didn't let a moment go by where he didn't embrace the young ladies. And just, it's a conversation that I'll never forget. It's a time, a moment that I'll never forget too. And I'm sure the girls that were there will never forget that moment as well.
Yeah, teaching skills. And I want to get to a clip of Kobe Bryant talking with Jimmy Kimmel on his late night show about his daughter, Gigi.
The best thing that happens is when we go out and fans will come up to me and she'll be standing next to me and they'll be like, hey, you got to have a boy. You and V got to have a boy, man. You got somebody carry on the tradition, the legacy. She's like, oh, I got this. You know, boy, for that, I got this. Like, that's right. Yes, you do. You got this.
Yeah, Gianna wanted to play for the University of Connecticut. I know you went to Rutgers, Cappy, but arguably UConn is one of the greatest college basketball programs, men or women, of all time. When it came to his relationship with Gianna, what were you able to see firsthand? What kind of things stood out to you?
He was a father first. You could tell because I know at Kobe's intensity, even when he was coaching her, you can see that. You know, he did it in a very gentle way. It wasn't the Kobe that we knew on the court. You know, although he practiced and preached the Mamba mentality, he just did it in a more gentle way. And I think it was very loving, you know, because you could see the father and the love that he had for his daughter on the sidelines. Once you become in that leadership role of being coach, that's the first thing that you think about. You think about those younger kids always. You put them before yourself. And it's the whole point of retirement and enjoying the game outside of playing the game. It's the only way that we have to kind of give back, not having Kobe around and thinking that he'll never be around and help change the women's game. And his daughter, Gigi, who loved the game just as much as Kobe did at the age of 13, you could see the potential. And I just imagine her going to UConn and her playing in the WNBA because it was her goal, and Kobe wanted to make that goal a realization.
Yeah, I remember seeing a picture of him wearing a WNBA sweatshirt. And for, you know, for many people, they're like, well, it's a big deal, it's a sweatshirt, but it's a statement, right? I mean, it's a statement that, hey, there is something, there's another league out there that you need to pay attention to if you don't know about the WNBA and just women in basketball in general.
Kobe gonna make that sweater very famous. We didn't know the impact that Kobe would have. We knew that we were terribly missing, but we just didn't know the impact. And I think that sweater, that statement that he made is gonna change lives forever. A figure such as Kobe, you know, in the sports community and the entire universe is huge, and he was a big advocate of it. He started dedicating his time so much to women's basketball that he could have ran for president if he wanted to and became the president of the WNBA right away. That's how much of an advocate and confidence that we had in Kobe Bryant.
One thing, Cappy, and I know this might be an uncomfortable question, but considering how he supported women the way he did, has that ever led to any conflicted feelings considering his past, his assault allegation in the past?
I don't know Kobe as that. I know Kobe Bryant as being the one with the Mamba mentality. Kobe is a father, he's a husband. He got married at such a young age, and still to this day, he was able to have his marriage. I mean, that says a lot about him and Vanessa and their commitment to each other. hell, they had the mama mentality when it came to being together. Kobe is the best basketball player that I've come to see since Michael Jordan, and that memory will last for me forever.
Considering how high profile Kobe was in his support of women and girls in sports, he's gone now, Cappy. How do you think the void will be filled? What's the plan going forward?
Honestly, nobody knows. You know, the only thing that we can do is continue to look at his videos. We can continue to look at his pictures and just see that smile that he carried every single time, no matter who the picture was for, what it was for, his smile remained the same. I think that's just something that we can carry on and remember for the rest of our lives and know that I just always thought in my mind that I'll hear his Hall of Fame speech. And I dedicated every single game I wore his sneakers because I admired him so much.
That's retired two-time WNBA champion and Olympic gold medalist Cappy Pondexter talking to our A. Martinez, host of KPCC's Air Talk. A, anything else you want to add about that interview, to that conversation you had with Cappy?
And that you could hear the emotion in her voice because Kobe Bryant was such an advocate for the WNBA. It's a league that has struggled to be profitable on its own. And to get an advocate, the level of Kobe Bryant, it led to a boost in the WNBA. Now that he's gone, you could hear in her voice the worry and that how will we get someone to support it the way he did. And that's going to be a question going forward for the league. But you could hear how much he meant to the WNBA in the last couple of years.
Well, it looks like the public memorial for Kobe Bryant has gotten underway. Beyonce is performing right now, I believe, doing the song XO. One thing I wanted to ask you about, A, was Kobe and the role of coaches on young people. He was a coach to many young basketball players, including his daughter Gigi. And among those traveling with Kobe at the time of the crash were two of Gigi's teammates, Peyton Chester and Elisa Altobelli. Elisa's mom and dad were also aboard. John Altobelli, her father, was a celebrated basketball coach at Orange Coast College. You knew about John Altobelli? Did you ever have the opportunity to meet him in any capacity?
Not at him. I played community college baseball, so I kind of kept track of the sport going forward. But John Altobelli was a legend at community college baseball. He coached at Orange Coast College for 27 years, won 4 California state championships. And if you're wondering, well, what's the big California? California community college baseball is really as high of a level as it can get. It has its own tournament apart from the national community college level. That's how elevated community college baseball is in California. So to win 4 titles in the most competitive community college baseball setting there is, that goes to show what level of a coach John Altobelli was. And you mentioned youth coaches. There is such, right now, a shortage of coaches, especially in inner city areas where you've got kids that are dying to play sports, that are dying just for any opportunity to play baseball, basketball, football. But if there isn't a coach there to help organize them, to help take up some of their time that they maybe otherwise would be playing video games or out somewhere else, that's the problem with youth sports. And what Kobe was able to do, not just with the Mamba Foundation up in Newbury Park, but just by promoting the fact that coaches are important, he got people and adults thinking, you know what, I'll do this too. I'll organize the kids in my area to start a team or a league. And that gives kids an opportunity to do something good for their bodies, good for their mind, and also give them a sense of teamwork as well. So that's one of the things that we'll certainly be missing with Kobe Bryant now gone.
Well, in addition to his career on the court, you know, he appeared to be planning for the next chapter, even much earlier in his career, dabbling in hip hop, later on into book publishing, film. Where do you reckon Kobe wanted to go ultimately with this passion? I mean, it looked like he was almost starting to recreate himself as like a media mogul.
That's exactly where he wanted to go. The hip hop career, that was early on when he was young. Actually, it's where he met Vanessa, his wife. It was a video. She was a backup dancer in a video, and Kobe happened to be on set, and that is where they met. Kobe's music career didn't go really anywhere. He was much better at playing basketball.
It was a good try. He tried,
which is more than most people can say about music, but he did give it a shot. But you're right. He had this in mind the whole time, and I think that also helped him understand that staying in Los Angeles, being in LA, especially toward the end of his career, when maybe he wasn't as good of a fit for the Lakers on the court, but realized, hey, you know what, being here at Staples Center with all these power brokers, much like LeBron is doing right now in Los Angeles, this is where I need to be if I want to extend or at least start this next phase of my career. And as you mentioned, content creator, content producer, someone that could look around for different projects to be a part of. And because of his name and the weight he carried here in Hollywood, with all these big shots who came to see him play, he could reach out to them and say, hey, I got an idea for this. What do you think of this? That's what he was planning on doing past the Oscar that he won for Dear Basketball.
Speaking of which, a couple of days after Kobe's passing, I had the opportunity to speak with veteran animator Charles Keene, who worked with Kobe on bringing his prose piece, Dear Basketball, to the screen in the form of an 8-minute animated short. When I spoke with Keene, he told me about his first meeting with Kobe at his little work studio in Hollywood, and he admitted to being a little self-conscious and nervous when Kobe and his family turned up.
That day, he showed up with Vanessa and the girls, and we brought him in, and there was this moment of, like, what's Kobe going to think of this tiny little studio? It was in a little duplex, and I mean, it wasn't like the big fancy studios. Just, and you looked around and saw the sketches on the wall. And, you know, for a moment I thought, oh, I know he's got to be disappointed. And he's, and he said, it's perfect.
Yeah. The recording of Kobe's monologue, his read comes off as very intimate. What conversations did you have with him about the recitation of the piece? Did you sort of guide him or coach him at all?
We walked down the street from our little studio to a recording studio at the end of Poinsettia. It's a recording studio where actual Michael Jackson, he recorded Thriller. And Kobe was so nervous to go in there. Like this, I mean, he's such a fan of Michael Jackson's work. Mm. And when we came time to record, Kobe was very quiet. He delivered it in a very simple, straightforward, conversational way. I thought, okay, good. Well, he's got that done. Now he's going to deliver something more dramatic. Second time, exactly the same. Third time, delivered it exactly the same. And at that point, I realized this is it. Kobe is going to deliver something very pure, entirely sincere, not inflected, not dramatized. He is not performing. He's revealing who he is. And it became the driver for the way every part of this whole piece was going to be.
I am wondering if he was thinking in terms of creating something that would speak for itself after he was gone, not only from the basketball court, but from life. And was he thinking about his legacy and future generations and how they viewed him?
For Kobe, he knew what he had done in setting a path for others. So this was his purpose, very much to inspire new generations beyond him. I mean, that was very intentional. Talking to Kobe, he would have this intense, fierce look in his eyes that would, his spirit in this movie, it had to connect to you in a very visceral way, like him. And I told Kobe, I can't just animate you moving across and shooting the ball. I have to know what's in your head, what's in your heart. How are you feeling? And so we went shot by shot through YouTube of Kobe's 20 greatest plays, and he remembered every moment and described that moment, why he was able to do that shot, what was his intention. I could live in his skin. I mean, that's what was, for an animator, it's all about living in the skin of someone you animate. I mean, there was a, his fade shot where he would throw his right hip out a little bit, and left hip was just back just far enough. And then, you know, he would come at the opponent and then back off and leap up into the air at a certain angle and do the whole thing. And I studied it and I knew it. I knew it exactly, the angle of his hand. And so, I mean, early on I said, Kobe, you've got the worst basketball player in the world animating you. He said, that's okay, Glenn, because everything you learn about basketball is going to be through studying him. So after the film was done, we were at the Lakers training center and the lights were off on the court. And I walked in and grabbed a basketball. I thought, I can do this. I mean, and this was so much about Kobe. You just set your mind to it and you study and you can do it. So I got the ball and I went way back into a three-point shot. I mean, way back. I wasn't making it easy on myself. And I dribbled the ball and then I jumped and threw my right hip out and my hand. It was 90 degrees. Everything, and all the way to releasing the ball. And Kobe would say, you know, even after the ball was off of his fingertips, I felt like I still had enough control. Like if I pulled my finger back, it might just not bounce too hard on the backboard. I mean, it was like this mystical connection of between him and the ball. And I felt all of that. And as I released the ball, it was flying, I mean, I could not believe it, straight for the basket on a perfect arc. I mean, I was dumbfounded. And then it fell 10 feet short. But
how do you read the words now in the aftermath of this tragedy?
There's a profound depth to them about him talking about his body not being able to go on. It's time to give it up, time to let it go.
I did everything for you. Because that's what you do when someone makes you feel as alive as you've made me feel. You gave a 6-year-old boy his Laker dream. And I'll always love you for it.
There was a moment where we had animated him walking into the tunnel, and it was first animated with him walking into the dark. And we felt that, this isn't right. He's not walking, he's not going away. So we changed it to walking into the light, into something new, into another purpose beyond. And it was very clear at that point for me that this was about a legacy that went far beyond Kobe. And it became very clear to me this was about after Kobe is gone, this legacy will continue on and touch many, many people. So there was inherent in that something that was really lasting.
And that's animator Charles Keene talking about working with Kobe Bryant on the Oscar-winning short Dear Basketball. Joining me in studio all hour for Air Talk is KPCC's A. Martinez. So, A, I did have a question for you about Dear Basketball. Did you get the sense that Kobe was thinking about his legacy when he wrote that piece and how people remembered him? Because on the one level, you know, it almost, in the aftermath of his passing, it almost feels like a bit of a eulogy written by the person who passed away.
Yeah, and it was at the end, last game of his career, the night before, he wrote Dear Basketball in the Players Tribune, which is a magazine that is really for athletes, by athletes. And he wrote it, and it was also on everyone's seat inside Staples Center the day of the game. So everyone that showed up that had a ticket to his last game was able to get the poem and see it in their hands and read it. But yeah, I think because it was 20 years with one team, he grew up in front of everyone's eyes. I think he wanted to put what he felt about basketball and write it down. I got to imagine, though, Stephen, that, yeah, he had something in mind to make this into something more, because mm-hmm. it was a story. He was telling a story. It had a beginning, a middle, an end, just like any other great story would. And then when it wound up becoming a movie, I mean, who else could have the temerity to walk up to John Williams and say, hey, do you want to do the music for my, for my short animated film? And Kobe Bryant really is one of the only people that would have the kind of weight to be able to do that. And it became an Oscar winner. So, yeah, I think that Kobe felt that it was a way to just sum up his career and then maybe make it something more in the future.
Yeah, and he was a pretty good writer, too. Yeah. We're remembering the late Kobe Bryant on the day of his public memorial, happening now at the Staples Center in downtown Los Angeles. Joining me for the hour is KPCC's A. Martinez, as well as our reporters in the field. It's Air Talk on KPCC. Be right back.
Kobe was L.A. Like, there are a few people who epitomize what L.A. means. The spirit of L.A., the fight of L.A., the dog of L.A., the cockiness, the arrogance.
It hit hard. You know, his wife also being Mexicana, Latina, I think it also, you know, it touched us that he, you know, embraced her culture, hence ours, and, it, you know, it's a huge loss.
Everybody in L.A. had that Mamba mentality to a certain extent because of Kobe.
Yeah.
Will not be denied. You will get the mission accomplished by any means necessary. That's what Mamba mentality means.
Giving us enjoyment and bringing us together, the Black Mamba, and how he brought Black and brown people together. And his daughter, that's the part that really hurt. And that father-daughter relationship was unfolding in front of us, and it was a person like who don't have kids. I was looking forward to how that unraveled, so I kind of like mimicked that.
Mamba, we miss you. We always gonna love you. You a legend. We keep on looking down on us, bro.
Welcome back to Air Talk. I'm Stephen Cuevas, filling in for Larry Mantle. And we're remembering the late Kobe Bryant on the day of his public memorial, happening now at the Staples Center in downtown Los Angeles. Joining me is KPCC's A. Martinez, host of, what is your show again?
Take Two.
Oh, Take Two. Two. Yeah. I'm teasing you. As well as our reporters in the field who we've been hearing from now. A, it looks like now Vanessa Bryant is speaking to those assembled at Staples Center. It was unclear whether or not she was going to speak at all today.
Yeah, and just moments before she did, she just let out a long breath. I could see that she just let out some air and then walked up. Jimmy Kimmel was the one speaking before her, the late night talk show host, and he handed it off to her. But we've seen a very long list of very recognizable names to any Laker fan or someone from Los Angeles. Phil Jackson, the former Lakers and Chicago Bulls coach. Jerry West, the person who who traded for Kobe Bryant in 1996. Lakers owner Jeannie Buss is there. Kanye West, Kim Kardashian, Russell Westbrook, James Harden, two of Kobe's contemporaries on the NBA court. Bill Russell, former Boston Celtic great. Anthony Davis, who currently plays for the Lakers. Pau Gasol, a teammate of Kobe Bryant in the second stage of his career when he became the leader of the Lakers, as opposed to when he was younger and Shaquille O'Neal was the commanding presence of the Lakers. Pau Gasol, who got challenged daily by Kobe Bryant in practice to bring out his inner black swan. He felt that Pau was always too nice, too soft, too much of a white swan, and he would always push him to bring out that meanness, that black swan, and they won two championships together. Alex Rodriguez, the baseball player, Jennifer Lopez, Adam Silver, the NBA's commissioner, Magic Johnson, Michael Jordan there as well, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. But one face that I saw in the crowd that I want to make sure that everyone knows is there is Gary Vitti. Gary Vitti was the longtime Lakers trainer. We've always heard about Kobe Bryant's toughness on the court, that he could play through pain. I'll never forget, Stephen, seeing Kobe Bryant a play against the Golden State Warriors in 2013. Late in the game, they were going back and forth. He went up for a shot and was fouled. He was on the ground writhing in pain. No one knew exactly what was going on. Everyone thought, well, maybe he just took a tough shot and he's going to shake it off. He stayed on the ground for 2 minutes, 3 minutes. And that's when everyone realized, uh-oh, something's wrong. He got up, walked to the bench to see Gary Vitti, the trainer, and it looked like it was a torn Achilles. We didn't know what was going on, but that's what it looked like. The way he was limping, the way he was walking, the announcers were speculating. They've seen all these injuries a million times before, so they felt pretty good that that's what it was. he walked back to the free throw line because he was fouled on a shot. So he had to make free throws, or at least take free throws. This is with a torn Achilles tendon, mind you, we find out later. Normally people can't even stand up, much less walk one way, walk another way. Hits both free throws, then walks off to the locker room on his own power with no help from anyone else on a torn Achilles tendon. And the reason why I bring up Gary Vitti is because Gary Vitti was the guy that helped stitch Kobe back together. Every time Kobe went up to win a game and came back down with some kind of injury, his shoulder, his Achilles, his knee, his groin, Gary Vitti would be the one personally, intimately with Kobe in the locker room, away from everyone, his teammates, his coaches, the media, to get him back put together so that he can go about out there on the court. I saw Gary Vitti's face. You could tell he's completely torn up about it because he helped put him back. He helped glue him back together so many times. And obviously now he can't help Kobe like he wishes he could.
Yeah, you know, I know fans feel that they have a very special relationship with an athlete like Kobe Bryant. But we often forget the people behind the scenes who are keeping them together, who are helping maintain them so they can continue to perform at that very high level.
Well, that's the one person an athlete can trust.
Yes.
Sometimes an athlete can't trust his own teammates. They can't trust the coaching staff because they have to make decisions based on how healthy that athlete is. But the one person on every team that an athlete has to be honest with and can be honest with is the trainer. That trainer's job is to get that guy back on the court. And he has to say, this hurts, this hurts. He can lie to us in the media because we're trying to find out stories. Is Kobe Bryant injured or not? But he can tell the trainer and he can tell Gary Vitti, and I'm sure he told him many times in 20 years what hurt, what didn't, and what he needed to do to get back on the court.
And you wonder if someone like that also kind of functions as a unofficial psychologist.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, when it comes to the mental part of the game.
Vitti has always said that the one guy he'd never had to push, because when someone's injured, there's a lot at stake there. There's lack of confidence. If it's a sprained ankle, can I put weight on the ankle again? Kobe Bryant needed to be reined back in. Gary Vitti always said that he had to make sure that Kobe didn't do too much while he's recovering from an injury because he didn't want him to get injured again. But I just saw Vitti's face, and he just looked completely torn up about this, because I'm sure he wishes he could help Kobe, but obviously can't.
We see that Vanessa Bryant was just speaking at this memorial about her daughter, Gigi, who she lost 4 weeks ago in this helicopter crash. And that got me thinking, about not only Gigi and her two friends, Peyton and Alyssa, who were traveling with her. They were, I'm sure, pretty good buddies as well as teammates. But I also got to thinking about the very close relationship that coaches have with youth athletes. Could you speak to that a little bit, the importance of that relationship? Because here we also lost, you know, three youth athletics coaches who were instrumental in the lives of young people.
Yeah, you remember Charles Barkley, the great basketball player for the Philadelphia 76ers, also the Phoenix Suns. He had a commercial way back in the day where he said, "I am not a role model." And it caused a big stir because, wait a second, you're a big athlete. Why aren't you a role model? His point was that other people in kids' lives need to be role models. And this is where coaches come in. It's one thing to wish you could be Kobe Bryant someday, wish you could be Magic Johnson someday. But who's the person day in and day out that helps you get there, that helps you either meet those expectations or manage those expectations? That's your coach. That's the coach of your baseball team, your basketball team, your football team, that's there every single day helping you along that journey. Mm. That's the importance of youth coaches in youth sports, in that they help kids, you know, just stay dreaming, but also stay realistic as well about what it means to play sports and possibly be a professional athlete someday. And sometimes those kids by those coaches get guided into other areas of life where they turn out to have fabulous careers, either in medicine or in anything else, but they think of sports as a way to get you going on that journey. And that's one of the things that Kobe Bryant late in his life felt was very important, to make sure that kids had these people, these daily role models in their lives, as opposed to the ones that they see on TV that, sure, are great to look up to, but they're not really good to interact with because you don't get to talk to Kobe Bryant every single day. If you're
Kobe,
a kid.
Kobe, of course, opened up this academy, the Mamba Academy. Where does the academy go from here in terms of leadership, in terms of longevity, in terms of viability.
Leadership's going to be the interesting question because it's, you know, it's Kobe. I mean, how do you replace that? A lot of the funds that they're raising based on this celebration of life, a lot of those funds are directed, I believed, to the Mamba Foundation, to the Youth Academy up there in Newbury Park. But yeah, that's going to be the interesting thing. I can't imagine they're going to let that suffer. I think he means so much to everyone that I think that is going to stay going at least a few years into the future. It's grown to a life of its own now. I mean, I don't know who's going to take it over and be the point person. No one can be Kobe, but maybe Vanessa gets more involved. Maybe the daughter, the oldest daughter, gets involved as well. I can't imagine that that's going to go away anytime soon. There's been too much attention paid to it now.
Right. Well, we certainly hope not, and perhaps it can inspire similar programs around Southern California and around the country as well. Well, A. Martinez, thank you very much for your steady hand in helping co-pilot our coverage of the Kobe Bryant Memorial, which continues at this hour in downtown Los Angeles. Thanks also to our KPCC reporters and producers in the field. And you can keep this conversation going on the AirTalk page at kpcc.org. Coming up in the next hour of AirTalk, we will discuss the verdict in the Harvey Weinstein sexual assault trial. We'll also delve into the Netflix series Hentified, which unfolds in LA's Boyle Heights neighborhood. We'll be back right after this.